On this day, it was a normal working day for myself and a chap called Detective Constable Ian Ferrell. We were the two detectives assigned to Deal Police Station. Our nearest supervisor, Detective Sergeant, was at Dover. We were in for 8 o'clock. We made the coffee, took it down to the office. Our office was at the back of Deal Police Station on the first floor, and from the windows, and there was plenty of them, it just gave a flat, clear view over towards Walmer and the concert hall, where the bell still is as is today at the gable end of one of at the end of the concert hall. And there was a loud bang. We looked across. There was a big plume of black smoke. Ian said he thought it was a gas explosion. I had my fears and said so. I think it could be more than that. So we dashed downstairs, got in the CID car, and drove straight round to the Barracks.
Can you describe the scene when you arrived there? How many minutes do you reckon you were there after the explosion?
We were probably there between 3 and 5 minutes after the explosion. We, because of our identification, we were able to gain access to the north barrack by the guard room, but we were instructed to park the car up. Having parked the car up, I knew the geography of the barracks. I'd been in the barracks the week before, and we just went running round there. On the way, I saw some chaps being led away from where the band take refreshment, the old coffee boat room at the back of the concert hall, two or three of which I recognised as friends. They'd obviously suffered injuries. They were bleeding from the ears, nose, mouth. One was Bob Graham, the other was Jay O'Neill, and I went straight onto the bomb site.
Did you realise pretty soon that there were fatalities?
Oh, absolutely. The destruction was massive. The complete roof of the coffee boat room had fallen down, and the outside walls had exploded.
But presumably, because you were there so early, there was nobody actually in control of the situation.
No, it was a bit chaotic. People with rank were trying to establish some form of control. I remember seeing a lot of junior bandsmen that were scrambling on the rubble. Some were distraught. The distraught ones were being led away not long after the first fire appliance arrived, and that's when order really started to kick in.
Could you sense there was a central point of a command centre, as it were?
Not really. I think the initial response from the people were in groups to be digging with their bare hands in concrete, in twisted wire, metal, where they thought people might be, or where they actually heard people moaning and groaning.
Can you recall what you found personally? Were you in dealing with people that you could see and had to try and dig out?
Unfortunately, the first thing I did see were body parts, which were being discarded by the junior lads, not surprisingly so, but I guess it was the police officer in me that it's important that, you know, we had to try and keep an idea of where they were found for the future investigation. But I just joined the then Drum Major John O'Connell in digging down to something, or somebody, excuse me, where we heard a cry for help.
Certainly Dr. Rawlings, who I've spoken to, had been, I think, the base medical officer at some stage in his Marines or Naval service, and he was there pretty quickly.
Dr. Rawlings was the medical officer when I first joined in 1963.
Right.
And he became, when he left, he became my doctor, my civilian doctor.
Right.
We used to call him the Dicky Bow Kid because he always wore a Dicky Bow, but he was there and he was a great help, because the situation was that people were being found where it wasn't just a case of picking them out. He had to establish what and where and how to do for the best for the chaps that were found. It was agreed that the mortuary should be in the boiler house at the end of that block. Detective Constables Neil Davidson and Bobby Gore were assigned to man that mortuary, which they did. And remains of the people that have died were taken into there. because of the location of where it was, the ambulances were kept a fair distance, and I say probably 200 yards by the parade ground, which was about 200 yards away from the scene. And although we were trying to do our best for the people underneath it, there was no secondary concern for a secondary device until really the five people came on board and then started to. It was important that we could hear where we were trying to dig, so there were you'd hear a whistle and then everybody would have to stop and stay really quiet, so then you could find out where the murmurs might be coming from. And
I understand there was a helicopter which was being a damn nuisance, really.
A news helicopter.
And that they had to then get Manston to put in an exclusion zone because they would interfere with anybody.
Oh yeah, we couldn't hear anything. It was just hovering above. And
and can you remember for a while the big gantry coming?
Yeah, because a lot of twisted metal was within the concrete, and even though you could hear the murmurs and the cries, as muffled as they were, there was no way that you could move that stuff with your hands.
So how long that day were you involved, do you remember?
Well, I do remember being fortunate, unfortunate if you like, we were there to get Bob Simmons out, and I just remember Bob being in a really bad way, and when we got him out, he obviously taken in his breath of fresh air and screamed out with the pain of the air going into probably what weren't his lungs anymore. And having got Bob out, we then heard murmurs underneath the rubble, and we started digging again, and we pulled out a guy called Steve Castle, who unfortunately, having moved his leg, and we shouldn't have, but we did, had a gash in his groin, and there was the usual plume of blood, and Keith Rawlins came across and tended to him. And I still see him every year at the band service reunion, Keith Castle. And every time I see his children, he introduces me as the guy that saved his dad's life, which is really a nice thing, but I have to say to his kids every year, if he says that again...
and you were there right on into the afternoon?
We stayed right on into the afternoon, you know.
Until everybody had been accounted for?
Until most had been accounted for. Obviously, there were parts that had to be established belonged to people, and whatever then was found. And then later that day, I was instructed to make a plan of the bomb site and establish with crosses on the plan where certain people were found.
So that was the stage where you became a detective constable again?
I don't think I ever did that day. I think probably I did because I was asked, can you remember who was where and who was where? Like, I remember seeing Davey McMillan, Dave Mack. I mean, I played football with him in the RMA Sunday football team the previous Sunday, and I knew his wife, and on entering that day, I saw him slumped over this locker, and he was clearly dead. But fortunately, he was intact, but dead.
Were you aware of the arrival of the Met anti-terrorist?
I was aware. We were told that they would be down, and that they would take control over the scene. They'd obviously had great experience in dealing with such matters. I don't think it really kicked in until the following day, although the search went on into the dark